The French nobles who responded brought with them a lot of expertise. This is often overlooked. On many an occasion, it's thought that they were usually motivated by avarice reasons. I have spoken in earlier lectures that clearly that was there. The rewards of success in battle, that would be land, property, booty, captives, whatever, clearly God's favor and clearly not to be regarded as something you shouldn't take. Power was accepted. That's what the great princes, that's what knights did. They exercised power. The question is, did they exercise it in a good Christian and logical way? Maybe the Normans were only worried about logical rather than Christian, but or did they exercise power poorly? So that was always an element that was there. On the other hand, they were also motivated to do this with strong religious reasons. And I think it is best to concentrate on these French nobles, the leaders of the First Crusade, as a means of understanding what motivated various people to assume the cross, and also to illustrate another aspect of the First Crusade. Not only did it economically and socially transform itself, this was a migration in that sense, but there was also a whole political battle being fought out as the Crusade moved east, because there was no overall commander. Because of the nature of European authority, because the way this expedition was launched, there wasn't a single king in command of this. There wasn't a Roman commander as you had in the classical age. This was a group of six major armies and many lesser contingents that pledged themselves to a religious objective, all of their efforts, their honor, and their wealth. And as their money ran out, as they gained booty, as they had alliances with the Emperor Alexis, that's why the Byzantine Emperor was so important, because he could provide money and horses, you could attract vassals to you. And there's this constant shifting of allegiances within the First Crusade among the lesser princes and knights as they would attach themselves to Bohemond or Raymond of Toulouse, depending on who was in a position of authority and who had the most money and horses. So that's an important point to keep. And this meant the leadership had to be eloquent as well as capable. You had to convince your fellow princes on what policy to adopt, that the objectives were there. And in this case, Audemer, the papal legate, played a crucial role. Everyone was impressed by him. Everyone agreed that on many an occasion, he managed to keep the crusade on track. And his death after the capture of Antioch was a real loss to the crusade, and is one of the reasons why the crusade almost loses its focus. Well, let's for a moment look at some of who these leaders are. In northern France, there was a resounding response. A series of armies departed, led by some of the most illustrious families in France, and these first princes who went on crusade established a tradition that their descendants would follow. And you'll find that many of the same names or family names keep reappearing in the course of the 12th and 13th century. While Philip I himself would not go, and he had his own reasons, he did send his brother, Hugh of Vermandois, who didn't seem to have the money and charisma to be a big league leader, but certainly was an important member of the nobility and commanded his own wing at the Battle of Antioch in 1098. Anna Comnena, the Byzantine princess historian, dismisses him as a rather arrogant fellow, but he represented the interests of the Capetian king of France, to whom most of the Crusader princes owed some kind of vassal liege homage. He was usually associated with Robert of Flanders, the Count of Flanders, to whom Alexis had written, Robert Curthose, the Duke of Normandy, the oldest son of William the Conqueror, and Robert's brother-in-law, Stephen of Blois, who was the Count of Blois in north-central France and had the misfortune of being married to the daughter of William the Conqueror. And it was his wife, Adele Matilda, who forced him to become a crusader. Stephen didn't really want to be a crusader. He really rather stayed at home in Blois and listened to poetry and wrote some really marvelous and revealing letters. He deserts at Antioch in 1098. He panics. And his wife, according to some accounts, denied him conjugal bliss until he went back and did it over. And he showed up on a later crusade and got killed. But at least the family honor was maintained. Robert Curthose is a good example because he mortgaged his duchy of Normandy for 10,000 marks, which is 1.6 million English silver pennies, the basic coin used, which gives you some sense of the scale of money that was necessary to outfit these expeditions.